Lennon nods it to Shelley. He touches around Raimondo and puts it in. Daniel Shalloway has just sent Vermees Army into the Western Conference Finals.
Hello and welcome to another playoff edition of the Sporting KC Show on your home for SKC Soccer Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm Nate Bucati, joined as always by the one and only Carter Augustine. Hello, Carter. How are you?
Great, Nate. Great. MLS playoffs, right? How are you?
MLS playoffs, Western Conference Finals. I think my heart rate has come down.
Wow, what a game.
Unbelievable stuff. We have a lot to get to on the show today, so let's dive right into it. Coming up on the show in the next segment, we're going to talk with our broadcast partner and buddy, Matty Lawrence, his thoughts on the playoffs, on the upcoming matchup against the Portland Timbers, and on the rest of the MLS playoffs as well. As we are down to four teams left in the quest for the 2018 MLS Cup. Then we're going to talk to the author of the Panenka in the Western Conference semifinals, Elie, scoring a goal, playing 90 minutes. We're going to talk with him in the next segment after that to break down this last game. Look, I think I will tell you, we're going to spend the majority of this week's show talking about the past because we have an off week coming up this weekend for international duty in the middle of the playoffs. So next week when we do the Sporting KC show, we can completely 100% focus in on the Portland Timbers and the Western Conference Finals. So it's a big show coming up. You're going to want to hear all of it. Going to be a lot of fun right here. And yes, Carter, it was breathtaking stuff. It was heart-stopping at times, and it was quite the roller coaster of emotions on Sunday at Children's Mercy Park.
Yeah, everything I think a soccer fan would want in a playoff game here in MLS. It was up and down roller coaster, like you said. And man, the first playoff game in what, 5 years didn't disappoint whatsoever. That place was packed to the brim, and some of the loudest celebrations I've heard. So what a game. And Sporting KC, as they've shown all year, finding a way to survive in advance.
Of course, they got goals early on from Diego Rubio and then Daniel Shalloway to make it 2-0, and you thought things look really good. They opened up the second half just assaulting the RSL goal, looking for the dagger, but they missed on a couple of opportunities. Next thing you know, Bofo Saucedo subs into the game and scores a goal to make it 2-1, and all of a sudden you go from having a two-goal lead to you give up another goal, and it's not just level. You're out at 2-2. You're knocked out of the playoffs. It's a unique situation because it's in the playoffs now in the away goal tiebreaker. The tension from that moment on in the game was just incredible.
Yeah, it was. You could tell the place kind of tightened up when that goal went in. And credit to him because he was an impact sub. He came on, looked lively before that, and played a big role in that goal where he helped win the ball back and then played the 1-2, and it's a fantastic finish. But you're right, the tension in there was way palpable. I mean, everyone knew the situation, obviously very knowledgeable in the stands, and you could tell that it was – it just ratcheted up after that, and I loved it. I mean, it turned into a fantastic game. I mean, it already was a fantastic game, but that you're right. That goal really changed the atmosphere, and then for Sporting to be able to respond and get one back, I think was crucial. And of course, it came from Felipe Gutierrez, who had an amazing game. I think he was one of the best players on the pitch in that game.
I'm glad you brought him up because that was where I was going to go next, and I haven't looked. In fact, I might do it while you're talking to me in a second here. At whoscored.com. It's a website that I like to go to that gives a lot of the statistical analysis of of soccer games. And I would have to guess that he would have been the top-rated player for Sporting Kansas City in the game. I thought he was the best player on the field.
Yeah, a huge role in all three goals. Could have had a few more involvement in that particular stat as well had they pounced on a few more opportunities, like you said, creating it early on in the second half. A few more in the first half, I think. Peter Vermees after the game said that they could have had three or four there in the first half and really put the game away, and he was at the center of it all. I don't know if that was a game plan that they had to, seeing the midfield for RSL, that they were going to try and get him a little further forward, but or maybe it was something he did on his own, seeing the space, the good player that he is, but it seemed like everything was flowing through him. The great the great run that Johnny Russell picks out for the first goal, and then the unselfish ability and the awareness to know where Diego Rubio is in that situation. He lays it off. Fantastic. Obviously, the pass on the second goal as well, just threading it through a couple of RSL bodies to get it to Daniel Shalloway, and then the little turn for the third goal, which was such a crucial moment because, like you said, just one more goal at that point from RSL would have sent them through, and they wound up getting that goal, and they had several opportunities as well. So at that particular moment, for him to pull out that bit of class with the turn and then the feed into Diego Rubio, he just had a fantastic game. There's another moment in the first half where he pinged one through to Rubio, who had that wonderful first touch to bring it down. And that's a pass that I just don't think anyone else on that field is making that day. He was incredible.
All right, so now I am looking at WhoScored.com. Their player ratings had Daniel Shalloway and Felipe Gutierrez basically tied for the best performers on the field. And obviously, if you score two goals, that's going to bump you up quite a bit in the course of the game. But Gutierrez had the two assists, like you said. You know, I think they ought to come up with some sort of a statistic where if you make the assist on a play that leads to a penalty, that would be a half assist or something. Yeah. If Johnny Russell gets a secondary assist, which he deserved on the first goal. But anyways, so here are some of the other statistics for Felipe Gutierrez in the game. Four key passes offensively in the game. He drew four fouls in the game, which I don't think should be overlooked as well, because that's the kind of pressure he was putting the other team under. He put in four tackles in the game, committed two fouls himself. When it comes to the passing numbers for Felipe Gutierrez, 85% completion on his passes, six crosses in the game. I mean, he was, you know, the highest rated passer on the team for Sporting Kansas City. And then, of course, the two assists and the pass that leads to the goal. And I thought he was flying around. I mean, I thought he was putting in tackles. One of the fouls he got called on was actually maybe the best tackle in the game when he hooked around.
Challenge.
Yeah, Beckerman, he got called for a foul.
And that would have led to a big numbers advantage for Sporting going up the other way as well.
He was just absolutely terrific in the game. I will point out Graham Zusi also at 85% completion on his passes on the day as well. But Felipe Gutierrez doing that in a congested midfield with guys like Luke Mulholland and Kyle Beckerman all over him from time to time. He was terrific. Now, you also mentioned, though, that the stress that came with this game and that everybody in the stadium knew once that goal was scored by Real Salt Lake that all of a sudden we're in a situation now where there's no margin for error. We go from looking like we're cruising to, and I'm just talking about the collective mindset of everybody in the stadium that's a Sporting KC fan or player, to all of a sudden we give up a goal, we're done. In other sports, you know, the coach can call a timeout and bring everybody together and say, okay, this is what we're going to do. I think it's one of the beauties of soccer that there is no such opportunity to huddle the entire team up, take a breath, and reassess things. Each individual is collectively is aware individually of what's going on, but it seemed like it was difficult for Sporting Kansas City as a unit to pull things back into shape and figure things out. I love your perspective on these things because you're on the sideline. You can hear both coaches talking. You can hear some of the interplay from the players on the sideline. Paint that picture for me in terms of what Peter Vermees was saying, what the players were feeling and reacting to once RSL scored that goal and the tension really, really turned up.
Yeah, I think more noticeably on that first goal was the boost it gave to RSL because they were under siege there for the first 5-10 minutes of that second half, and it really seemed more likely that Sporting was going to get a third and kind of cruise, like you just said, to victory. So I think just
we're in it now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The injection it gave to RSL, the bench, who were complaining about just about everything up until that point, it got a more positive outlook. You could see the lift that it gave their players on the field. Then for Sporting to come back was huge, as we talked about, and get that next goal. But then the second goal was scored with still so much time left that that's the point where I think the Sporting bench gets a little tighter, you know, because like you said, you can't call a timeout. So on the bench, there's only so much they can do to try and stop the momentum turning, which it had at that point. And there was that stretch after Krylak scored from the corner where RSL got a couple really good chances, the ball pinging around in the box, bodies flying everywhere. One of them falls to Nick Beisler, and you wonder how he doesn't score from that opportunity. And then a couple other ones shortly thereafter. But one thing that I think everyone noticed was despite maybe them not being as organized as they would have liked in those situations. And we heard from Matt Beasler after the game saying that they're going to look at some things because they didn't like how some of those attacking scenarios for RSL went down. There was still the desire and the energy from the players, and how many last-ditch blocks did we see from Matt Beasler and from Michael Parra throughout that stretch where RSL was getting in to really dangerous opportunities. So I think despite some things that they'll want to clean up, that the effort was something that is, you know, a championship-type effort, and that's ultimately what got them through in some scenarios where the ball is around the six and you think that RSL can just poke it home, and that one goal will send them through.
It's the madness of the playoffs, too, a bounce here or there. And we're very aware of how thin the margins are in the postseason. But Sporting Kansas City advance, and they're into the Western Conference Finals against the Portland Timbers. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk with Matt Lawrence, get his perspective on this one as well. Also, Elie Sanchez coming up to join us on the show in a little bit. This is the Sporting Kansas City Show.
And here's a great ball over the top from Russell to Gutierrez, across to Rubio, and he buries it! Diego Rubio just keeps scoring massive goals for Sporting Kansas City. In the 14th minute, it's SKC 1, Real Salt Lake 0.
The Sporting Kansas City Show continues on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB, as Vermees Army are in fact marching on to the Western Conference Finals. Carter Augustine with me as always, and joined on the phone by our broadcast partner. Of course, we're on the radio once it gets to the postseason. All the national TV guys come in and hog all the TV glory. So we're radio guys, which is a lot of fun anyway in the postseason. And Matt Lawrence joins us as always on the radio call. Matt Lawrence, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing really well, Nate. You know, you and I have got a face for the radio. Carter, he's a TV man all the way, but it's a shame that us guys have to be on the radio. But you're right. You know, the national TV comes in. It's great that Sporting KC get watched, obviously, nationwide. And hopefully we can win the Western Conference and push on and win MLS Cup as well. I can't wait to get started out in Portland with you guys.
Well, luckily for the folks, this is why you want to buy a ticket to the next playoff game is if you're in the stadium, you still get to see Carter's tall, dark, and handsome self on post-game doing the interviews with the players and coaches on the field, right? So he still gets some camera time.
Yeah, exactly. It's okay for Carter and the fans. You know, you and I, we stay up in the booth. You know, us olden timers, we stay in the booth, stay out of it. But, yeah, everyone can listen to our dulcet tones and watch the game live on national TV, switch the volume off there, put our volume on the radio, and it's much better, surely.
I like that plan. I don't know if my mom has been talking to you guys trying to boost my hype here. I don't know. I appreciate it. But we were talking before the game. It's fun, actually, to do the radio from time to time, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I love doing TV, obviously, when we get to broadcast for Fox KC. But equally, I like the radio. You get to describe more. Mm-hmm. Obviously, people aren't lucky enough to see the pictures. So we can talk through not only the tactics, but Nate gets to talk through more of the moves as well. And I love it. It's a nice change of pace. And yes, so far we've been successful. So far, you know, the radio broadcast, it's not just about the players. It's about the radio broadcast, obviously taking the players onto that Western Conference final. And it should be a good matchup, guys. I'm not sure about you, but I think this has the makings of a very good two-game series. Not that the RSL series wasn't a good one as well.
Yeah, I think that we all agreed. I think we were choosing between which teams we wanted in the semifinals, and a lot of us thought that it was a better matchup with Portland than it was with RSL. Well, now we'll get to find out if you got to be careful what you wish for, because now we have that matchup. But Maddie, we're going to talk more about that matchup next week, because we got a week off before they play, and we got another Sporting Kansas City Show next week. So we're going to spend more time dissecting what was an unforgettable night at Children's Mercy Park this past Sunday night. And maybe it's a good thing we were on radio as well, because if we already had faces for radio, I think that my face has a few extra stress lines worked into it since that game, because those last 20 minutes were incredibly stressful, were they not?
Yeah, they really were. It was a stressful event, I think, for the players, for the fans, for the coaching staff alike. SKC certainly didn't make things easy in that last 20 minutes. Let's put it that way, until Daniel Shalvey scored right to the death, and the referee decided to call that a day, even though I'm pretty sure that wasn't quite the end of the game, but he called it anyway. I'm just amazed that it was that tough for SKC, Nate and Carter, because the opening 25, possibly 30 minutes of that game at Children's Mercy Park, I think in my tenure as an MLS analyst, I've been at Sporting KC for 2 years. Previous to that, I worked for Sky doing MLS back in England. So for 3 years, I've watched SKC. And I think that was possibly the best 25, 30 minutes I've seen. I thought they were absolutely magnificent. I thought the front three specifically were quite phenomenal. I thought they were relatively quiet down in RSL. Obviously, Kyrie Shelton played through the middle. He played as a number nine down at Rio Tinto Stadium. But I thought by their high standards, I thought they were relatively kept quiet by the RSL defence. But at Children's Mercy Park, there was no stopping them. And I thought those three guys, aided ably, obviously, by everybody else, but specifically, I have to give a mention to Felipe Gutierrez, obviously, for his couple of assists. But I thought they were so dominant in that attacking third. And Rubio, Shalvey, and obviously Johnny Russell were just too hot to handle. And I thought the all-round play, the possession, I think Peter Vermees and his coaching staff had to have been incredibly happy with that. As happy as they were with that opening 25 minutes, half an hour, I think they'll be a little upset maybe at a couple of the goals they conceded. I thought things got disjointed slightly at the back. But look, cannot take anything away for what was just a fantastic night. I guess the fact that SKC conceded a goal or two just made things a little bit more exciting and just built to that crescendo of noise that we all heard and felt, really, rumbling through us through the stadium when Daniel Shalvey got that winner right to the death.
Well, Matt, you mentioned it maybe being the best 25 minutes or so over these past 3-4 years. And I might have to agree with you. And I think it's maybe a microcosm of the form that this team is in right now since August, winning 10 of the last 15 games, I believe. And I'm curious, maybe they seem to pop up with goals here in situations where maybe in the past they wouldn't have. They get 5 over this two-legged series with RSL. Obviously, the single-season record for goals scored both in a season and away from home. And is that just kind of the different dimension that guys like Felipe Gutierrez, Johnny Russell have brought in and this attack overall that maybe we haven't seen from Sporting over the past couple of years?
Definitely, Carter. It has to be those guys brought in have aided things, certainly in the attack, because look, the defense and the goalkeeper have remained pretty consistent throughout the last two or three seasons with the odd change here and there. But that back four and goalkeeper with Tim obviously has remained resolute and pretty constant, as I say. But yeah, SKC adding Gutierrez and adding Johnny Russell and adding, I guess, Kyrie Shelton too. And also just Daniel Shalvey getting that year or two more experience as well. He's really come into his own this season. Still obviously a very young man, very young in terms of his professional career. But I think it's just a testament to the squad that Peter Vermees has built up over the last two or three seasons. Slowly but surely, he's not gone for any, I would say, big time, you know, signings where you bring in Ibrahimovic or you bring in a Wayne Rooney. It's been done steadfastly. It's been done thoughtfully. And it's not just bringing in star power. It's bringing in players who are not only obviously very good on the pitch and who will fight for starting 11 positions, but it's people who fit into the SKC ethos, guys. I know that you guys probably know the dressing room better than I do, but I think everybody gets on. I think when you've got 20 or 25 peers all together, there's normally one or two people you don't like. It's just the law of averages. But I think with SKC, it's obvious how well they all get on. And when there's a bad tackle on, say, Johnny Russell, everybody's around the referee. Everybody's around the person who put in the bad tackle. I just think there's such a togetherness. Of course, there's talent, but I think it's the togetherness that gives any team, any good team I've ever played in, that extra percentile or two. And I think it's so highly evident that Peter Vermees not only scouts the player in terms of his ability on the pitch, but scouts them off the pitch as well, sees how well they will fit into his dressing room and his style of play. And as I say, that's testament to Peter and also to the scouting staff, the scouting network as well. But I think for me, that is what gives SKC the edge. Yes, talented, but also just that supreme togetherness, which is obviously led by Matt Beazer. And he, I think he will be the one who approaches all the new players and makes sure that that SKC ethos is understood from the moment that people dress in, step into the dressing room or training ground. I think Johnny Russell certainly is somebody who bought into it straight away and understood the prestige of playing for SKC.
And we talked about the those national TV guys doing the games. And I went back and watched the TV broadcast, Matty. And Alejandro Moreno was the color commentator of the game. He was very, very critical of the way Sporting Kansas City, in his terms, mismanaged the game down the stretch. He called it juvenile at one point. And I think he said stupid maybe at one point as well. He thought that they let the game get away from them. But Peter Vermees, after the game, said, look, it's the playoffs, and RSL, when they got a goal, they had new life about them, and they were throwing everything they possibly could at them, and that's what you see sometimes. What can Sporting Kansas City maybe learn from that game as they go into the next round?
I think defensively they weren't as sound from set pieces as they have been in previous games. I think we saw from the Krylock header, which was, we all commented on it at the time, was totally unmarked in the six-yard box. But at times these things happen. You sometimes lose your markers if you're marking zonally. Somebody doesn't read the fly to the ball and jumps underneath it maybe. Maybe if Ike Opara was playing in that game again, maybe he just heads the ball away and Krylock doesn't get that free header. For me, it's just staying resolute. It's staying tight at the back. I'm not sure I could go along with juvenile or stupid. I could go along with the fact that the game was slightly mismanaged. I just mean that in terms of there's no reason when you play so well and you're 2-0 up to concede goals. But you have to agree with Peter Vermees that RSL had nothing to lose. So at times we knew they were playing 4-2-4. And of course they're going to get chances. I just think from SKC's point of view, they wouldn't want to gift goals. And I think the Krylock header was a gift of a goal. Apart from that, though, I thought it was just a wonderful spectacle, a wonderful advert for MLS. And more than that, it was a wonderful advert for what Peter Vermees has done at SKC and the squad and the team he's built together. Carter was speaking earlier about the attacking attributes that SKC have got this season. And that is not only that starting 11, it's off the bench, as we know as well. Yes, we're talking about the game against RSL, but I think Rubio missing from next week's game against Portland will be a big loss. Whether he would have started or not, he's somebody who could have come on off the bench and affected the game. So for me, in terms of mismanagement, I think that's even a little bit harsh. It's just things that you would change in the future. You wouldn't gift a goal from a set piece, and you probably wouldn't want Diego Rubio to pick up a relatively needless yellow and be suspended. But look, that's part of football. You're always going to concede goals. Players always going to be suspended. It's how you deal with those hardships. And on the night, SKC dealt with them very well. And were the deserved winners. I know people talked about the penalty being slightly dubious, and Nick Beazer obviously missed a really gilt-edged chance as well. But look, I know it's a cliche, but you do make your own luck in this game. And SKC with a better side over 180 minutes, and I think they duly go through to meet Portland. And for, you know, national broadcasters, I think they're there at times to come up with words and storylines and to say things were mismanaged and stupid and juvenile. I really don't think that's the case. I don't think Peter Vermees would be too happy if he heard that, nor would the players. And I think, look, if you were there at the game as 20,000 people were, you'd just see a very resolute SKC side who could have crumbled. I think in previous seasons may have crumbled under that pressure from RSL. This team didn't. This team rose to the occasion. And Daniel Shalvey got another goal at the death. I think I said it was the winner earlier. It obviously wasn't the winner, but it put the game to bed. And I just thought it was a very accomplished two legs from SKC. Because look, they did half the job down at Rio Tinto Stadium. That was where the performance wasn't that good, but they ground out the results. And that was the foundation, the platform for moving on to the game at Children's Mercy Park, which I thought was a wonderful affair. And as I said, a wonderful advert for MLS and SKC as a whole.
Well, I know we want to talk about the other playoff games that happened and what's going on in the playoffs, but it's the award season right now, and I wanted to ask you guys maybe a couple things. First of all, Tata Martino named Coach of the Year today for Atlanta in MLS. But the best 11 was released actually I think just before the sporting game, the playoff game this weekend, and there's no sporting players in the MLS Best 11. And I'm curious what you guys think, if that will be thought of by the team, if they'll take umbrage to that in any way, or if that doesn't affect this Sporting Kansas City team. I'm curious to what you guys think.
Nate, I'll let you answer that one first.
Okay, I'll bite. I'll say that I think that the fact that no player from Sporting Kansas City was in the Best 11 is the only case you need to make for why Peter Vermees should be Manager of the Year. I think Tata Martino did a great job, but his team did not finish the deal in terms of winning the Supporters' Shield. I think that when you look at the money spent on the players that he has at his disposal, and you look at what Sporting Kansas City has built instead to finish first place in the Western Conference, to me, that's all you need to know. If nobody believes that any of the Best 11 players resided on the team that finished with the most points in the West and the third most points in all of MLS, it must be a heck of a job of assembling that team and coaching that team by Peter Vermees. But I do think Sporting Kansas, I know for a fact that Peter Vermees has told people in the past that he has used as motivation his entire career any snub that he ever got, and would use those quotes and things that people said against him to get himself just completely pissed by the time he was arriving at the stadium on the bus ride. I'm pretty sure he'll use that to point out to the team that nobody respects them and thinks that they belong in this, considering especially if they get to the MLS Cup final against one of those two darling teams in the East between New York and Atlanta. Matt Lawrence, your thoughts?
Piggybacking off that, Nate, I think that without a shadow of a doubt, Peter Vermees was the coach of the year this year for many of the reasons that you mentioned there. I have to go along with the fact that the wage bill money's just money, but the wage bill certainly plays a big part of things, whether you're looking around Europe and the wage bill at Manchester City or the wage bill at Juventus or at Bayern Munich is always bigger. And at times the coaches, lower down the league, say a Sean Dyche at Burnley in the EPL, I'm talking English very, very quickly here, or about the English game rather, who took Burnley with pretty much the smallest wage bill into the Europa League, finishing seventh. And I think somebody like Peter Vermees, who's done it not on a shoestring budget, but on a much smaller budget, people have to take notice of that. I think the Tata Martino was an easy choice. And I'm not just saying it, being a biased SKC worker commentator that I think he should have got it. I think his overall job over the last couple of seasons, I know this was just for this season, but it's culminated in this season, and I think he certainly should have won that job. Going off Carter's question, do the players feel snubbed? They may feel slightly snubbed, but I don't think they will be affected by that. I think there's such a good, strong team mentality. I think any of the players would turn down individual plaudits to lift MLS Cup, and I think there's obviously a fair chance of that. For me, if I'm picking the best 11, then at least two or three of the SKC players are getting in. Now, I know it's very hard. I think they go with a 3-4-3 formation.
Yeah. Well,
for the best 11.
Yeah, they hate fullbacks for the best 11. They did get one on there this year, but yeah, they usually go with three at the back for the best 11.
Look, guys, we're out of time here, so we're gonna have to wrap it up. We'll talk playoffs next week with Maddie and set the whole scene for the Western Conference semifinals. I'll just end it with this statement, though. I think the players should take it as in a weird way, a heck of a compliment to the entire team. That we've all talked about it. Maybe part of the problem with finding a best 11 player from the Sporting Kansas City side is the three of us have sat around and talked about who the best player for Sporting Kansas City is this year, and it's almost impossible to answer because I almost feel like every single player on the field carries an equal amount of importance to this team for the specific job he does. And at the end of the day, this is a team game, and it's not an individual game, and this is a team, and I think maybe it's the best team collectively in this tournament, but time will tell. Maddie, thank you so much for the time. We will talk to you next week, Thanksgiving week, as we get ready for the first leg of the Western Conference Finals. Maddie, we'll talk to you then.
No problem at all, guys. Always great to talk to you.
All right, that is Maddie Lawrence. We could talk to him for the entire hour if we wanted to, but we got to talk to Elie next on the Sporting KC Show.
There's the whistle. Up runs Elie with the right foot, and he dinks it home, sending Raimondo to his left-hand side helplessly. And Sporting KC have reclaimed a two-goal lead in the series.
That is calmness under pressure. Calmness personified there from Elie in the playoffs. A little Panenka down the centre of the goal. Romando makes his mind up, goes to the left. That is so cool, calm and collected from Elie. Nobody but Elie could do that.
Welcome back to the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for Sporting Kansas City playoff soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Nate Bucchetti along with Carter Augustine, and we are joined now by a man who had one of those unforgettable moments in Sunday's match, the 4-2 win over Real Salt Lake, the penalty, the chip right down the middle, the Panenko. Elie Sanchez joins us. Hello, Elie. Hello, Elie. How are you?
Hello, Nate and Carter. I'm fine. How are you?
I am great. Let's just go ahead and start right there. Take me through the penalty that we had seen you attempt six penalties through the course of the season, and we had not seen you pull out the chip a single time. We had not seen you go down the middle a single time. Tell us about your thought process going to that one and what you remember about the penalty.
So first thing that came into my mind is when the referee called the penalty, I saw perfectly from behind how the defender tackled Diego, and yeah, I was 100% sure that it was a penalty. So I start looking around me, and I look at Diego, and I look at Johnny, and I look at Susie, and I look at Felipe, the potential, you know, kickers of that penalty, especially because I came from the one that they missed in Dallas. So no one of them gave me back that look, and that was meaning that I was to take that penalty. So that gave me a lot of confidence that everybody was trusting me again. And I just decided to step up and go to take the ball.
Well, it came at a time where they had just scored, Elie, and I'm curious if you're talking about the teammates instilling that confidence in you. Was that going through your mind as well, the fact that RSL had just pulled one back despite you guys having the better opportunities up until that point, and knowing that if they score one more and it ends in 2-2, that they are through?
Yeah, it was an important moment. You know, we were 2-1, but at the end, I think that we started the second half in a good rhythm, trying to play faster the ball, and we create some awesome chances and that we could not score. And when you don't score, the chances that you create, there is a rule, non-official rule, that says that you cannot forgive, because at the end the other team is going to take those chances against you, and that's what Salek was doing. And I'm just glad that I could score the penalty. About what you were saying with your first question, Nate, you know, I went through the middle because. I don't know. I just had the feeling that the goalkeeper, Rimando, would try to jump so bad to stop the ball, and I just decided to, at that moment, to go through the middle.
So I had read on Twitter that maybe he had some words for you right before you took the penalty, and I know that happens a lot. There's that cat-and-mouse game between the goalkeeper and the penalty taker oftentimes. Can you share with us what he said to you right before you lined up to take it?
Yeah, I mean, it happened every time. Almost every time the goalkeeper tried to do their job and try to put you under pressure. I mean, he just take the ball and gave it to me. And at that moment, he told me, okay, make sure that you go one side or the other. Like, try to kick as far as you can from me. And at that moment, I already decided that I was going through the middle. So that made me doubt. So, like, that made me crazy. I started doubting myself and asking myself, could he read my mind or something like that, because I could not believe those words. So also, again, I'm glad that I didn't change my mind and the penalty, I could score the penalty.
I love stories like that. I mean, I try to put myself in your shoes in that situation, and if I had already decided I was going to go down the middle, and then the goalkeeper said something like that, I might have had a nervous breakdown on the field. I don't know if I would have stayed with it. I mean, that's incredible stuff. You looked so calm and cool when you did it, too. I mean, you just it didn't seem like it fazed you at all, but there it was. And I want to ask you, too, you looked like you ran over and made a signal. Was that to your teammates in the corner after you scored the goal?
You know, about if I'm nervous or not, I think, I don't know if an advantage or it's something that I should not be, but I'm never nervous when I'm going to kick the penalty. Sometimes I miss a little bit of that feeling that put me under pressure, because I think it's necessary to have that responsibility on you, but I don't know. It's how I am, and I don't feel that before the penalties. And then when I scored, you know, my brother is here in town. My mom is also here, and my girlfriend. They were all together on the stands, and yeah, I just ran. I knew that they were in that corner, and I just after the penalty, I just ran through them in their direction, and also it was the corner where all our players and Mateo, the physical coach, they were warming up just in case that they had to come in. And yeah, it was a fun moment. It was a happy moment for everybody. And you know, I've never scored before in that goal. So I'm also happy for the people behind the goal, because they also cheer for us every game. And they support in a really good way, like you could feel on Sunday.
Well, that leads me to one question, Ilya. I was going to save it for the end, but you talk about these guys that are supporting you every game. You've played here in a cup final, but that was the first playoff game at Children's Mercy Park in 5 years. What did you make of the atmosphere this past Sunday?
I mean, it was fantastic. When you are playing for a result, and when you are trying to go to the next round, and you always know that you will have a tough moment like we had against Salt Lake, and I don't know, I truly believe that they'll help us to stay one goal up to Salt Lake, and especially at the extra time when the referee had 7 minutes. I think that they made the difference, and they made that us keep up with the result and with the game. So I'm just so happy, so proud of them. And during the season, you know, the atmosphere is awesome, but they really played as a one more player on Sunday.
We're visiting with Ilya Sanchez as Sporting Kansas City are on to the Western Conference Finals. And Ilya, I want to ask you also about the stretch in the game. You mentioned the 7 minutes of stoppage time, and I felt like by the time you guys got there and the crowd was into it, you were able to kind of put your foot on the game and keep the ball in their end and control things to kill off the game. And then, of course, you got the exclamation point with Daniel Shalloway scoring at the end. But there was that 15 to 20 minutes right before that where, you know, RSL scored the second goal to really put you under pressure, and they had a few sequences where they had some chances to score. And I was making the comment to Carter earlier, in a lot of other sports, if something like that happens, the coach is able to call a timeout and gather everyone together and huddle up and discuss, hey, this is how we need to manage things over the next 15 minutes. But in soccer, the game just keeps going, and you don't have that opportunity. Can you tell me, as a guy who's right in the middle of the field, what are you trying to communicate to your teammates at that time, and how difficult is it to communicate to the team if you have to adjust the way you're playing once the score line becomes what it was at 3-2?
Yeah, I mean, if we could talk to the coach in those moments, I'm sure that that would help us a lot. But that's not allowed to do in soccer. And also, when you are up a goal and you know that you just have 20 minutes to end the game, 15 minutes, you know that the other team is coming. So it's a natural reaction, and it will always be like this. And always try to communicate to your teammates is that feeling that you have, that you are in danger and you have to take the best of you in that moment, is what you try to make everybody feel. I'm sure that the 11 players that we were on the field, we were having that feeling, but sometimes it's so difficult to put all those feelings in the same direction, in the same way. So, you know that the opponent is coming, trying to put players forward and trying to create chances as fast as they can. And all what we need to do is trying to take advantage of those situations when we have the ball, keep it, and not just that, and trying to make to be more hurtful to them. So we could do it in the 97th minute, but I hope that in the next games, if we have the same situation, we will be able to do it a little bit soon.
Well, now, Ilya, you guys advance on to play Portland in the Western Conference Finals. But first, an international break and a weekend off, or at least a weekend off from the playoffs. What will you guys be doing over this next week that you have the weekend off?
Yeah, we don't need to change anything. I mean, I don't know the coach plans, but I could guess that we're going to have training every day, and then in the weekend we will do something else, like maybe an exercise or a game against each other, like in a big space, maybe full field. So to not lose this rhythm and this shape that we have, that we already have. So trying to be smart, of course, not having any injury or any stupid tackle or something like that, but working hard, because even it seems like it's a long time, 2 weeks it's going to be so fast. And Portland is a team that they are waiting for us. They know that we are we were first in the West, so they are waiting for us in Portland for that first game, and we are very aware that it's going to be very, very tough.
Well, Ilya, it was certainly a thrilling game on Sunday. It's in some ways I wish we could just get to the next game here in a few days, but I'm sure the extra time to rest and recover will be good for you guys. So we can't wait for the Western Conference Finals to start in a week and a half. Thanks a lot for the time, and congratulations, Ilya.
Thank you for the call, and I hope that we can bring you another big game, not just in Portland, also at home in KC.
I'm sure you guys will. That is Ilya Sanchez, and just great stuff. I love hearing those stories about the penalties and what goes into the mind games there. Ilya won that mind game, and Sporting Kansas City won the overall game, and they're on to the Western Conference Finals. Carter and I will wrap up the show right after this.
Now it's headed back in to Gutierrez, sliding it through for Shalloway. Shalloway puts it in! It's 2-0!
Back to wrap things up on another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show right here on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Our thanks to Matt Lawrence and Ilya Sanchez for joining us. Now, Carter, after all that drama, we have to wait over the weekend and then the Western Conference Finals on November 25th at Portland. Then, of course, that's a Sunday at 6:30. And then we turn around, and the game, the return leg, will be on Thursday night, November 29th at 8:30. Get your tickets. Go to sportingkc.com. It'll take you right to the SeatGeek link. So, look, tickets are available. Even if the game is sold out through the SeatGeek link, you can always get yourself tickets depending on the price. And, of course, they're standing room only, which – will be just fine for you, by the way.
Yeah, there's not a bad seat or standing area. Like watching on the bridge is actually is a pretty cool experience.
Maybe the best vantage point because it's almost right over the cauldron, and you're up high, but you're on top of the field at the same time. You can see everything really well from right there. So not a bad place in the house, sitting or standing, for that Western Conference Final. We do know that that'll be the last home game for Sporting KC, regardless of the result, because both New York and Atlanta went through in the Eastern Conference. That means both those teams have a higher point total than Sporting Kansas City. So if Sporting make it to MLS Cup, it'll either be in Harrison, New Jersey to take on the Red Bulls or Atlanta to take on Atlanta United. And we have this weekend off, Carter, because of international duty. And the United States is going to go play against England on Thursday. I know that you and I have talked about this. You're a huge United States men's national team fan, as am I. I think you've even had a harder time getting too interested in what they've been doing ever since that fateful day in Trinidad, because there just hasn't really been much to play for or a direction. And we still don't know who the head coach is. There are some young, exciting players, in my opinion, that are involved these days. Maybe everyone just assumes it's going to be Greg Berhalter taking the helm. He's out of the playoffs now, so maybe we'll get the announcement soon. Any excitement for you in this game against England coming up on Thursday?
Yeah, I was reserving most of my excitement for after the World Cup. I thought that would be, we had the friendlies before the World Cup, and that kind of felt really silly to me. So, you know, now that that's come and gone, and my sorrow is still in the back of my heart, but not necessarily at the front anymore. The past few friendlies, like you said, there's been some good opportunities to watch some youngsters play, but it's just been really tough to get into it with Dave Sarakan still at the helm. It's strange that it's taken a year to appoint a head coach, including a World Cup has come and gone. I thought they might have been waiting for that to happen, and maybe that would speak to one of the candidates. But like you said, all signs seem to point to Greg Berhalter, U.S. Soccer coming out a couple weeks ago saying that they're pretty close to naming the guy. And it kind of, reading between the lines, it was kind of like, okay, when the Columbus Crew season is done, is when we will have a head coach. And in the press conference, he was pretty short with everyone trying to ask him questions about that. Understandably, he was still, feeling the loss that Columbus had there on the road at Red Bulls. But it seems like it's going to be Berhalter. And if it is, if they do name him, I think that's a point where I'll get a little more excited as well, because then there'll be an actual a time where the carts were all starting to get pulled in the same direction.
We'll get to see an identity. And one thing I will say, look, the reports, Taylor Twellman's confirmed it, other people have confirmed it, that Peter Vermees is not going to be the next national team coach. We can argue whether or not that's smart by U.S. Soccer. I'll call it a win for Sporting Kansas City.
Certainly.
And be happy about that. But if it's not going to be Peter Vermees, the one thing I do like about Greg Berhalter is there will be an identity. I feel certain about that. He's a man who's actually studied Peter Vermees quite a bit. He told me that himself when I did that game at Fox Sports 1 when Sporting played Columbus. He studied what they were doing in Kansas City in terms of how he wanted to build things in Columbus. And that's what I think we all want. We want to just know who this U.S. men's national team is going to be going forward, what they're going to look like. They need an identity, which they never had under Jurgen Klinsmann. And hopefully, once that gets announced, we can move in that direction. But we'll see. Maybe Thursday will be the last time we see them with this interim tag over the head coach. Then it's back to the MLS playoffs, and I think that's all we really care about right now. Carter, thanks so much for the time this week. This has been fun. When we reconvene next week, it's going to be all eyes on Portland, Oregon, and I just simply cannot wait.
I mean, this series is going to be a doozy. It's set up really, really well. Two clashing styles and plenty of talent on display. It's going to be really fun.
And two fan bases that I think absolutely reflect the best of MLS and where it's gotten to. No more partially empty stadiums to me in MLS the rest of the way. It's going to be incredible atmospheres in both places. Will be a lot of fun. All right, our thanks again to Matt Lawrence and to Elie for joining us on the show. Thanks to you for listening. whether it's live here on Sports Radio 810 or on the podcast, which, of course, you can download, Carter, at all the different places that that you can listen to podcasts, basically.
Certainly, yeah. You can go on Spotify, you can go on iTunes, and, of course, on the 810 homepage as well. Yeah, there's anywhere you want to get it. Appreciate you listening in.
And we'll see you next week on the Sporting Kansas City Show.